I thought I had seen earlier in this week or very recently that Trump basically told Zelensky, dude, you're going to have to give up some land to negotiate a peace on this. I know Zelensky doesn't want to do that, but it sounded also like the idea of us giving him Tomahawk missiles, something that you and I both agree on, bad idea. That's not going to happen. So where are we with Russia and Ukraine? Daniel Davis.
Yeah, that's definitely not going to happen. Trump unambiguously said that. I don't know why he ever entertained it, because in the first of last week, even before you and I visited last Tuesday, he said, I might just give them up. And then on Wednesday, he said, yeah, I'm not going to do that. So that was pretty clear to Zelensky. I guess he was just posturing. But the bottom line is now Zelensky's going back and he's still trying to get with his European friends to find other things to give him, et cetera, while they're looking for ways to increase a 19th sanctions package. Don't know why they didn't recognize the first 18 failed, but somehow they think maybe this one will. But in terms of the bigger meeting that was agreed to by Trump with Putin, there's supposed to be a ministerial meeting between Sergey Lavrov and Marco Rubio. And then later there's going to be a Trump, a Putin meeting in Hungary, if they come about. And as of this morning, there was some contentious conversation reported between Rubio and Lavrov because they're still pretty far apart on what the two sides will both agree to. So this is not looking like it's going to be solved anytime soon by next Tuesday either.
Okay, so you have two sides to an agreement. You're in a ceasefire. Israel on one side, Hamas on the other. Obviously, devil's always in the details, but if you agree to a ceasefire and you declare that a ceasefire is in place, if you start shooting at each other and killing each other, doesn't that definitionally mean there is not a ceasefire in place? Daniel, I'm struggling with this because everyone keeps talking about keeping these ceasefire agreement together, and we need to hold on to the ceasefire agreement. Seems to me both sides just maybe capitulated. I don't know. Daniel, that's why we have you. Welcome.
Yeah, that does seem to be what's happening, because it's definitely not just one side or the other. Even President Trump himself, and he was acknowledging some of this, said, I don't think it was the Hamas leadership per se. It may have just been some rogue elements. And if that's the case, and I actually don't doubt it, that Israeli side actually showed some video and it seemed pretty clear there were some armed men in the strip that were heading towards some of their troops. But then the response was, I think, completely out of proportion of anything. They bombed all kinds of other areas of the strip, killed 60 people, not just the ones who did the killing. And if someone fires in a violation of the ceasefire, then by all means go after them, because that's authorized according to the rules of engagement. But you can't go after somebody else that's not even related to that, because Trump's probably right. It probably wasn't the Hamas, because the organization itself has no motivation to do this because it can only be bad for them. But there are some out of control elements, as there were on 10/7, by the way. It was not all Hamas. It was some out of control elements that killed a majority of the non-military people. So this has been an enduring problem over there, and one of the things that they're going to have to get a handle on.
So it's just reflective of the fact that Hamas is not the cohesive, connected organization that they're presented to the world as. I mean, I joked about this, I think last week when you and I talked. If you're familiar with the movie Monty Python, Life of Brian, they have all these splitter organizations. Every single one of them doesn't want the Romans. This is in Jesus's times, but they can't get along together. So we have various elements who all hate Israel, let's say, but they're not necessarily beneath the Hamas-controlled umbrella, so they're free to roam about and do whatever the hell they want.
Well, that's a good part of it, because there is for sure widespread hatred of Israel inside the Strip, and frankly, it's not hard to understand why, when the whole place has been turned into a moonscape, and everybody has lost their home and their way of life, et cetera. And that's just you can't escape that kind of an outcome when that's what happens for 2 years. But the problem is that they're not, this monolithic group. And also, you have inside, this is also not surprising, you have a lot of the Palestinian people absolutely incensed and hate Hamas more than they hate Israel, because they realize that until this group agrees to stop and leave the place, they are going to continue to be attacked. And they can blame Israel for dropping the bombs, and there's some credibility to that. But it's also true, and they recognize it, that as long as Hamas is resisting, they're the ones who are paying the price. So they're frankly sick of all the combatants and they want them all out.
Well, I recognize that we have this, splitter, this faction issue maybe going on. They also are having a problem finding or delivering the deceased hostages. And Hamas keeps saying, listen, we're trying. We just don't know where all of them are. And I think you had made the point last week, and it's an excellent one. Since everything has been bombed, it is certainly possible that some of these hostages are buried beneath rubble somewhere, and Hamas doesn't necessarily know where they are, but even if they do, how to get them out.
Right, and they apparently do know where most of them, maybe even all of them are, because they know where they were held, but there continues to be a very difficult situation. And listen, there's again, no motivation for Hamas to hold off on this. They gain literally nothing from this. Once they gave the last of the living hostages back, that was the end of any kind of leverage that they had. So there's no motivation to hold this back. And even the International Committee of the Red Cross has validated from within the Strip that these places where these remaining hostages are literally buried under buildings that the Israeli Defense Forces have dropped over the 2 years, et cetera. So they've got to bring in heavy equipment, that they've got to have a peaceful situation so that they can come in and excavate these areas. And it's just going to take some time.
There's clearly going to need to be like a post-World War II rebuilding kind of thing going on. That's going to require leadership and some sort of independent force that can substitute itself in the place of the Hamas leadership, if I can use that term loosely. Hamas has to move out. Some acceptable force is going to have to be there. What do you think is going to be acceptable to the Palestinian people living in Gaza? Clearly, Israel running that is not going to work for them. They're going to want some sort of maybe perhaps international body. What do you think is going to come from this, Daniel?
This is the absolute biggest issue that has to be overcome now for there ever to be any peace here at all. Everybody said, Trump, in fact, was talking about, you know, peace in the Middle East and all that, and signed that Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, et cetera. But all that was signed there was phase one, which is basically a ceasefire and an exchange of hostages on both sides. That has been completed. All of the hard part, the phase two and beyond, which is substantial, hasn't even been negotiated yet. So none of those issues have been accepted or resolved by the two sides. And it's not even just what the Palestinian people will accept on theirs. It's what the Israeli forces will accept either. And they both have to accept it. And that is really, really hard to imagine how both sides are going to find somebody they can accept on a long-term leadership.
Well, is it possible that leaders from the countries who've entered into the Abraham Accords are at least leaning toward maybe entertaining that notion of, let's work collectively, let's have our differences, but let's work collectively for our economic benefit? That seems to me to, you could get a draw from various Arab countries in the region that could successfully manage the situation.
Yeah, there's two separate things at place here, and you're 100% right on that. In fact, in the news just this morning, Egypt has said that they would send a contingent of up to 4,000 along with Indonesia, and I can't remember the other two countries. There's four countries. Azerbaijan might have been one of the other ones, or maybe it was Armenia. Sorry, I get those confused sometimes. But those countries have said, yes, we'll do the interim stabilization force, what is going to bring initial peace to the place. And that's completely separate from who's going to govern the Gaza Strip from the Palestinian side on a go forward basis. And as you may know, that's one of the big sticking points for the Israeli side, because many in the government don't want there to be any kind of permanent residence of the Palestinian enclave. They still harbor the idea that we want to get them all out. So having them agree to whoever's going to be there is one of the most difficult things that has to be negotiated.
I, of course, understand the challenges that presents. But if you found this acceptable peacekeeping force that could stabilize the region, you could maybe sometime down the road establish enough peace and enough stability to maybe have an election.
Well, yeah, and for sure that's going to end up happening. You may recall that did happen in 2005, which is when Hamas was initially elected, and then everything broke down after that, and we had, of course, the 2006 war in Lebanon, which then had ramifications inside the Strip, and then Hamas quit having elections after that. So the people didn't get any more choices after that. That will certainly happen in the future here. But there is additional issues beyond those really hard ones, like what about the region? Because Israel wants to expand the Abraham Accords. Trump wants to expand the Abraham Accords, but the countries in the region say for that to happen, like Saudi Arabia, the kingpin of all this, they say there has to be some kind of Palestinian state, which Israel is still adamantly opposed to. So the region, the countries in the region absolutely do want, and they have been emphatic about saying, we want peace throughout the region with Israel, but it has to be a mutual peace. And there again is one of the big difficulties.
Well, I think we'll be living with this reality for a while, Daniel Davis. It ain't going to solve itself between now and next Tuesday, I'm sure about that.
I think so.
Daniel Davis, we cannot have a conversation without addressing the current status, Russia and Ukraine.